Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll have that call in now for teachers, principals, any other educators, really from any school district, because I think a lot of districts are having the same discussion. So if you're in Long Island, Westchester, Rockland, New Jersey, wherever you are, Connecticut, wherever this debate is taking place, and it's getting hot about standardized testing, because it's really a national debate. It's driven a lot by No Child Left Behind, federal policy. But it's certainly gotten hot in New York City, and it's led the New York City Public Schools Chancellor, the brand newly minted one, Dennis Walcott, on the job for a whole almost 2 weeks, which means he's almost 20% of the way toward matching Kathy Black's tenure, by the way. Tell us what you make of Dennis Walcott's peace offering over the weekend in a speech at the Columbia University Teachers College. He said, quote, here's the quote, "People on both sides of this debate have been guilty of contributing to the current polarized atmosphere. I view my transition to the role of chancellor as an opportunity for us to begin anew." And what he was referring to was not just the Kathy Black debate. That certainly helped polarize it because of her seeming lack of qualification and lack of getting it. And, of course, that didn't work out. But he seems to be offering everybody else an olive branch here and saying, well, maybe the Bloomberg side has gotten too polarized in this debate. Maybe it's gotten too hot on their side. And teachers, parents, do you think it's gotten too hot on your side about when to close a failing school, about how much to rely on standardized tests? As much to assess the school system's success as to assess any individual student, but certainly also the students. So if it's the debate that's gotten out of hand, how do you get it back on productive ground? 212-433-9692. And here's one more thing that Dennis Walcott said in that speech. We'll play a clip. When asked about how he knows a school is succeeding, since the debate is so much about when to close a failing school, and a failing is defined by test scores. He did not mention testing or any empirical data. When asked about how he knows a school is succeeding, here is some of what Dennis Walcott said.
You look at the faces of the students. You see the parents in there. You see the principal of the APs moving around. You see the artwork on the wall. You listen to the tone of the individuals who are talking, and you know that is a great school. I want to see those types of schools throughout the five boroughs in every zip code in every neighborhood on behalf of our children.
New schools chancellor Dennis Walcott speaking at Teachers College over the weekend. So what's your take? Is he saying that a school can be failing by all the metrics but succeeding because of the faces of the students and the artwork on the wall? How do you measure a school? And how should Dennis Walcott measure your school as he begins his tenure and makes decisions about which schools to close? Hedden in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for calling.
How you doing, Brian? How you doing?
Good. And you're a guidance counselor, I understand?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
All right. So, you know, just listening to this, and I appreciate Mr. Walcott's olive branch over the weekend, but I still feel that the rhetoric is not enough, especially on the side of, you know, on the side of the teachers. My general consensus is the smaller the schools have actually lessened the voices of the teachers.
Did you say the smaller schools?
Well, I work in a small school myself. Mm-hmm. What I'm feeling is that even though the development of small schools has been successful within student success, what I'm feeling is that within the union voice, within the teacher's voice, it's fractured our voice. So it feels that there's less coming from us and less effective pardon my son in the background. it's less effective, a less effective voice, if you know what I'm saying. Like there's less going out there. I feel like there's not enough there's not enough to voice to go around. Do you get what I'm saying? I'm sorry.
Yeah, but well, you think because the units, the bargaining units, are organized by school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the bargaining unit is the whole UFT,
right.
But there are chapters in each school. That mm-hmm. the smaller school system disaggregates teachers, disconnects them from each other, and then it's harder to negotiate a unified position. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you for. Thank you for putting it so concisely.
And what would you argue for?
Well, I'm feeling that these, especially the larger schools, I'm in a larger school, and the main school is being closed within this larger school. Now, if we had more of a connective group within the small schools, which is something that I don't feel is very effective, I feel that there's not enough union leadership or not a small committee within these large buildings that can begin to build a consensus between each one of those smaller working units. You know, something that if, say, a small like after-school strike needs to be formed. I haven't seen any of those happen. But just trying to find some sort of way within the union leadership to continue mm-hmm. to spread our voice. I mean, I'm not saying that Mr. Walcott's, reaching out is not something positive,
mm-hmm.
but I'm feeling that there really needs to be something on the other side. There needs to be more on the other side of the
debate. Hedden, how would you judge whether a school is failing? You heard that clip. How would you judge whether, if you walked into your own school not knowing anything previously,
right.
and you looked at test scores, and test scores, you know, were down the drain,
mm-hmm.
but you saw the... I'm going to get his clip. The principal or APs moving around. You see the artwork on the wall. You listen to the individuals who are talking. You know, bright eyes on the part of the students. How would you balance all that?
How would I balance all that? First of all, it's not about asking the principals that are asking they're walking around, but asking the other not so quite bright-eyed students what are the habits of mind of the school. What are the rules formed within themselves that would really define where the education is going. What's the mission of the school? Is it being accomplished outside of test scores? Because test scores don't really work whatsoever. Especially, I work in a school with that serves immigrant children, and when they first come here, I mean, I'm not talking children, I'm talking about teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So when they first come here and you give them a test score, I mean, you give them a test, they're not going to pass it. But if they go down and they know that they have to think critically about certain subjects and they could express that, I have to think critically about the social issues and the historical issues and then combine it into my own logic, then I really feel that the school is succeeding. But that needs to be something that needs to be integrated.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a little time, but it needs to be integrated across, you know, teachers, parents, administrators.
And Hedden, I'm going to leave it there. I thank you very much for your call. Good luck back in school next week.
All right. Thank you so much, sir.
And Philip in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Philip. You're a teacher?
Yes, Brian.
Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I think that Dennis Walcott's well-meaning call for, cooling the rhetoric is a variation of lipstick on a pig. That is, the mayors and the chancellors, both Klein and Black, now Walcott, are so bad, so misguided, that the only way to counter it is what seems to be extreme rhetoric. Can I give you an example?
Go ahead.
The Wall Street Journal and the New York Post several weeks ago did stories on Regents tampering, how the grade of 65 is the most popular grade in Regents scores because teachers tamper with the results. That is, they move up any grade from 55 up to 65. This was
because of the because of the reliance on measuring teachers and schools by their test score results.
Well, that is coming, but there's been a tradition in New York City schools called the dirty little secret of Regents tampering. It happens all the time for all kinds of reasons, but bonuses, that bad idea, and now evaluating teachers by test scores will only increase the cheating. But the point I'm making is that when the Wall Street Journal went to Chancellor Klein, then Chancellor Klein, no, I guess he was out, yeah, and asked him for a comment on the cheating that goes on in the system, mm-hmm. he had no comment. He would also not comment to the New York Post when they did a similar story.
So what would you do?
Oh, the solution is so simple that it shocks the conscience that it hasn't been done. Blind grading. That's what they do in law schools in many states. That is, do not allow teachers to correct their own students' standardized tests.
Philip, thank you very much. We're going to leave it there and move on to George in Upper Manhattan. Hi, George. You're on WNYC. You're a school psychologist?
Yes, Brian. How are you? Thanks
Good.
For taking my call.
Thank you for making it.
Okay. Two problems with the schools. First of all, I think the chancellor is right about enthusiasm. I think that certainly, if you see kids are enthusiastic and responding to teaching, that's certainly a very good. And the chancellor is, you know, from the Urban League. He's used to working with the community and with people that are touching the kids. And touching the kids is what it's really all about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kudo in there for him. The second thing is turning schools into test preparation centers. It's a very, very bad idea. I mean, all you're doing is preparing kids to take tests. You're not preparing kids to learn to survive in the society. And what we've done traditionally over time in the Board of Education is we've used the schools as almost incarceration. We keep kids in school to keep them off the street, to keep them from doing anything that might hurt themselves or other people. We haven't really educated them. We've hired teachers that are good disciplinarians that keep their kids with their hands folded in their classrooms and behaving well rather than learning. And now we're trying to turn it around so the school, instead of being a repository for kids, we're trying to turn it into an educational center. Well, for years, we've taken the best of what we've had from Harvard, Princeton, and Yale and put them in Wall Street or put them in medical school or put them in any other place except the classroom. The teacher has been, you know, given the idea, well, if you can do, that's Harvard, Princeton, and Yale, if you can't teach. So we've given students, the best of our students, the idea that teaching is the worst of all possible professions. And then we've taken people in the Board of Education here in New York.
And I can't, you know, keep going down this road. I think we get it, and we've done whole shows on why we don't have the teaching corps that some people would like. But do you think that's the key? Walcott's talking about toning down the rhetoric on the policy questions of when to close a school, how much to rely on standardized tests. Are you saying that none of that stuff really stacks up to the working conditions and pay for teachers? And if those things were addressed, then we would just have a better workforce in the schools and then things would get better?
We're paying $100,000 a year to teachers that have been in the field for a long time. In other words, the longer they've been there, the more they get paid. So what we've done basically is we're paying teachers for being in the classroom, for surviving.
George, I'm going to leave it there. I appreciate your points. And Amelia in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello, Amelia. You're a special ed teacher?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for doing that difficult work.
Thank you very kindly. Listen, I work with autistic kids, and some of our kids go to inclusion. And so, therefore, they're placed in situations where they may have to take a standardized test. But the aspect that's never being discussed, where the special ed kid is forced to take a standardized test, some can, but many can't. And we have to start looking at the intelligences and start testing those aspects as opposed to our standard testing methods. If that can be addressed to some degree to also equate funding, then we would be on a better scenario. In addition, I think it's great that Wilcott has stuck his hand out and said, let's tone down the rhetoric. However, can he control or can he have influence over the mayor and find out if he can stop spending his own personal money to denigrate teachers and the UFP? Can he do that?
You're talking about mailings that have gone out to residents all over the city at Bloomberg's personal expense. They're meant to shore up his sagging popularity in general, but one of the things that he emphasizes is that he's trying to just preserve the best teachers' jobs in the schools. And you take that as an attack on the teaching force.
Absolutely, and I'm offended by it because the UFT gets their money from the members. And if there is any federal funding, I don't know. However, if we're never going to have the kind of money to even try to have an equal playing field, if he's going to spend his Bloomberg mass media money or mogul money to castigate us, and when is he going to spend his money towards at least effectuating our standardized tests that need to be modified in general for the special ed child? Autistic children are children who are considered behavioral difficulties. Where is that? Where is that in the standardized testing? Forget standard. Mm-hmm. Let's not have standard. Let's do some modification of it so that our students and the other intelligences that they have can be tested, and then therefore perhaps look at how funding can be come to the city. Mm-hmm.
To best help those kids.
Right? Exactly.
Amelia, thank you so much. And thanks to all of you who called. Responding to Dennis Wolcott. Well, I would say truce not on, wouldn't you? Based on the calls that we got so far, and we could go on, and I apologize to all the teachers and others in the school system who are hanging on, but I think we get the idea that there's a lot of work to be done from the Bloomberg side in addition to Dennis Wolcott going to Teachers College on Saturday and saying let's tone down the rhetoric on both sides. So it'll be interesting to see when he holds a news conference or when reporters get a hold of the mayor today following that weekend speech by Wolcott, whether this is something that they want to follow up on with any specifics. So thanks to all of you who called. Again, hope you enjoy your week off. We do lots of education issues here, especially on weeks off from school, so we can serve our education professionals in the audience. And again, happy Passover beginning tonight to all our Jewish listeners. We will have an actual Passover-related segment later in the program. Talk about bitter herbs. As the first Seder night approaches, Sean Gibby, a convert to Judaism, will talk about loving the religion, but let's say getting used to the food. So that's coming up later in the show. Coming up next, how to end the war in Afghanistan without selling out women's rights. We have a very special guest, a former member of the Afghan Parliament, who's been dubbed the bravest woman in Afghanistan, and she'll be here in our studio to talk about her experiences and what she thinks should come next. Stay with us.